From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In spite of the Congressional Budget Office showing the positive economic impacts of raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour, Senate parliamentarian Elizabeth McDonough on Thursday rejected the raise from the COVID relief bill that's being considered by Congress. If Democrats want to use a simple majority in the Senate via a budget reconciliation process to pass the bill, they cannot now include a federal minimum wage raise in the $1.9 trillion bill. Senate Budget Committee Chair Bernie Sanders was livid, saying he would find another way, including raising taxes on major corporations that don't pay their workers a living wage. The current federal minimum wage is a paltry $7.25 an hour. My guest is Kate Kahn, Legislative and Advocacy Director at Community Change. Welcome to the program, Kate.
Thank you for having me.
So why, as far as you can tell, did the Senate parliamentarian reject this aspect of the bill from being part of it if a budget reconciliation process is to be used? What was her justification?
Well, I haven't read the actual ruling, but from having lived through a budget reconciliation process when I was working in the Senate, the rules are very narrow on what can qualify and what can't qualify and when. So timing and actual dollar amounts really matter when you're talking about a budget reconciliation process, because it's very specific to a budget resolution for any given fiscal year. So she ruled that it was out of bounds.
Now, for one of the things. Bernie Sanders pointed out that he couldn't understand why drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge would be fine with the Senate parliamentarian, but not a federal minimum wage raise. What do you think of that?
It is a very outdated, I would say, limited process and is inconsistent. And I can totally see why Senator Sanders would argue that. And I think that it speaks to the larger problems we have of outdated rules in the United States Senate that do not reflect a democratic process, the majority rules, which we need in order to govern.
Some have even suggested, like Ilhan Omar suggested, that the Senate parliamentarian should be fired and replaced. This was something that Republicans did do, I believe, something like a couple of decades ago. And it really does speak to, in her opinion, and the opinion of many others, why the Senate needs to get rid of its filibuster, because it's that threat of filibuster from the 50 Republican senators that is forcing Democrats to use this budget reconciliation process. And others have also pointed out that the federal minimum wage raise is supported by a majority of Americans, and those Republicans that want to stop it represent a minority of Americans just because of the way in which our elections are rigged. And so it's really quite sad to see this. You know, it's easier, one person pointed out, it's easier for President Biden to drop bombs on Syria than to raise the minimum wage.
Yes, I totally understand the anger and the impact of so many millions of people who are suffering, losing out on a raise is unconscionable. And the outdated rules and over-reliance on one individual's judgment is a really hard thing to swallow right now. And I agree that it speaks again to the need to update the rules of the United States Senate, including filibuster reform and overhauling how budget reconciliation happens as well.
Now, President Biden immediately sort of capitulated and said that while he was disappointed by the Senate parliamentarian's decision, he would respect it. And interestingly enough, the House said that it would keep that aspect in the bill because, of course, the House can pass what it wants to pass. And then eventually, when the Senate has its own version of the bill, there needs to be this reconciliation. So even if the House passes a version of the bill with the minimum wage increase, what does that mean necessarily for the Senate to take it up?
So the House will pass their bill, and the Senate can then take it up any time. And because the parliamentarian ruled the way she did, it only takes a procedural objection, something called a point of order, to remove the minimum wage increase provision from the Senate version of the budget. So that leaves the opportunity to try and get an amendment passed into the budget, but it will require enough agreement to get approval. And I think that's what we heard Senator Sanders discuss also on Thursday, was the attempts that he will try and make to pass an amendment to get the minimum wage to stay in the package.
Right. So what do you make of this? Some are calling it a plan B, which is to, you know, we offer far too many corporations, far too many subsidies. And he has suggested using taxes as an incentive for companies that are, especially the major companies, to start paying their workers a minimum wage. I mean, and that is something you would imagine that would be the government's right to do. You don't get to get tax breaks or subsidies if you aren't paying your workers just this bare minimum.
I think you're absolutely right. The approach, it reflects a shift in emphasis instead of emphasizing the workers and an outdated system. It actually goes to the heart of where we need to free up resources to help support working families. And it absolutely should be on the employers that get far more tax breaks and have far more money to be a part of the solution here. And I think Senator Sanders has an approach, and Senator Wyden also started speaking about an approach that he has, and he is the chair of the committee with jurisdiction over taxes. So I think we may very well see several versions of amendments when the Senate takes up this budget package,
right,
to Wyden, try and get the minimum wage back in.
Wyden is the Senate Finance Committee chair, while Senator Sanders is the Senate Budget Committee chair. Speaking of big corporations, Costco announced that it would be raising its minimum wage to $16 an hour. The CEO of Costco announced the increase on Thursday at a U.S. Senate Budget Committee hearing on worker wages. And, you know, this is a company that doesn't seem to have a problem turning a profit while paying its workers more than what many big corporations do pay, which really gives lie to this argument that raising the minimum wage will be a job killer, right? That's a standard conservative response.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, Costco, it's worth mentioning, Costco also provides healthcare for their full-time employees. And not only did they say they were going to increase the minimum wage to a dollar higher than is being debated right now in Congress, they said, we're going to do it next week, which I think is a really important signal that this can absolutely be done. And I think your point about profits is exactly right. We know there's a way.
It's not just, unfortunately, Senate Republicans who oppose raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. A person who appears to now be the Democrats' biggest enemy in the Senate is one of their own, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who I suppose because of the 50-50 split in the Senate seems to think of himself as a kingmaker and has started to oppose. He is one of those opposing a $15 an hour minimum wage. I mean, it's just really remarkable that the Democrats can't, you know, whip all their votes in line. Does this speak to Chuck Schumer's inability to be an effective leader, or simply Joe Manchin's, you know, capitulation to what he sees as pressures from essentially a conservative state that elects him?
I think, again, it speaks to the need to update the rules in the United States Senate. There is a longstanding institution, and there's this notion that as a senator, you get to offer an amendment at any time. You get to have, you know, you bring your own politics in to drive your priorities in the Senate. And it's very apparent that those state-specific priorities or member-senator-specific priorities are a hindrance to fully functioning and governing in times like this, when there's an outdated rule that is interfering with democracy, like the filibuster. And then we rely on outdated tools like the budget reconciliation process, which is built for a very specific purpose, to balance the federal budget, to get around the 60 vote threshold in the Senate. And neither are sustainable. It's time to shift the dynamics so that there's an emphasis on actual legislating and policymaking instead of individual politics.
What about the Republican response to this? Because apparently there is one, a so-called moderate Republican and a far-right Republican, Mitt Romney and Tom Cotton, have joined forces to raise the minimum wage to a whopping $10 an hour. And I believe that's in 5 years. What are they proposing, and why is it not even nearly enough?
So yes, the Romney-Cotton proposal is very problematic on several fronts. One, it is insufficient. It doesn't propose to raise the minimum wage to $10 an hour, which is, we know from everything that we've studied, is inadequate. I mean, would leave many millions of people without adequate wages. And it wouldn't raise the wage to $10 an hour until 2025, whereas the other proposals that are out there that are trying to get us to 15, namely the one that the parliamentarian ruled against, it would actually raise the wage to $15 an hour by 2025. So gradually start to increase the wage, so people would get a raise immediately, which we know through living through this pandemic for the past year and seeing what's happening in our own neighborhoods is vital. People need a raise. The other thing is that the Romney-Cotton proposal is, it includes a very cynical and racist ploy, I would say, to require, in order for people to get a raise to $10 an hour, which is insufficient, to connect that to an outdated, universally disliked employment verification system called E-Verify. And E-Verify is expensive, it's riddled with privacy concerns, and it is designed to punish low-wage workers of color. And that is exactly what happens, and to try and make it harder for workers to unionize as well. And
they're tying immigration enforcement to a federal minimum wage raise that's just basically a raise of $2.75, maybe in many years.
Exactly. Wow. On top of the election that we just had, which directly repudiated Trumpism and these politics of exclusion and punishment. And that's why I say it is a deeply cynical approach, and it is unworkable. And everyone knows that, from employers to workers. And it also very much emphasizes workers. And instead of putting an emphasis on the employers, as we discussed earlier, the Sanders and Wyden approaches trying to figure out how to make sure that employers have more of a role here. And it's just flawed all around. And it's also rooted in just politics of exclusion and racist beliefs.
The Congressional Budget Office laid out the benefits of increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour. It did, and of course, conservatives seized on this, did say that there would be some job losses, but the overall impact to the economy in terms of, raising people's ability to survive, at least according to the report, the overall conclusion was that it was a far more positive change than not. I mean, even Florida, which elected Trump in 2020, chose to increase the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. I can't remember which senator it was who recently complained about the $15 an hour raise, said that when I was a kid, I earned $6. John Thune, it was Senator John Thune, who said he earned $6 an hour as a teenager in the 1970s. Well, adjusted for inflation, that would be $20 an hour today. So he made the case against himself there. I mean, it's just shocking. Why are Republicans so against a measure that is popular even among their base?
There are a lot of ways to answer that question. I will first agree with your point that it is outrageous. And if you look at, wages in 1968 compared to wages now, it's just unconscionable.
I mean, $15 is not nearly enough. $15 is low bar. It's paltry on its own.
Exactly. I could not agree more. And yes, it just speaks to the interests. Senator Thune's probably showing his cards there and his interests, which are not in reflective of the working people of South Dakota.
Which is where he represents. So if this minimum wage increase does not make it into the final budget bill, the final COVID relief bill, which is looking likely, will senators using this Plan B approach with tax credits, will they have to craft a whole new bill, or can they insert the tax aspect, the Plan B, into the COVID relief bill, you think?
Well, the Senate will take up the budget resolution that the House passes Friday, and they will go through a process of attempting to amend it. And there will be likely several attempts to amend the bill to include some version of the minimum wage. And if that does not work, I think there will be a regrouping and trying to figure out what are the other avenues available to Congress to increase the minimum wage. And I think on a positive note, we are as disappointed as we all are and angry, righteously angry. There's also a sense of a real fighting spirit and commitment that we are hearing from Capitol Hill and from the White House. And I think we need to see that leadership, and we need it to fight to the end until we win. It's past time.
And of course, the entire COVID relief bill is taking far too long to make it through Congress to begin with. It's a $1.9 trillion bill. Americans are still suffering and struggling. The latest unemployment report, the Labor Department figures showed that even though unemployment numbers might be going down a little bit, there's still far too many people that applied for jobless benefits in 1 week alone. The pandemic is still causing widespread economic pain, and unemployment benefits, I understand, will expire. The current ones will expire sometime mid-March, which is the absolute deadline for Congress to be able to pass this bill into law and extend those benefits, potentially send checks to Americans, and maybe even somehow raise the federal minimum wage, among other things, right?
Yes. And it's, it does take a long time to legislate. And this is one of the faster tracks to do so in Congress that is available to Congress. And I do think I've seen the House and the Senate working together through this whole process to try and speed it up as quickly as possible, because they're very aware of the deadline of March 14th being the unemployment insurance cliff. And even as fast as they are trying to move, it is still likely that there will be a gap in people's benefits. And that is just unacceptable given what everything that people have gone through in this past year and how much people are hurting. And we at Community Change have started an entire campaign about this, trying to really drive the urgency and the need for immediate relief for people that are suffering, and also addressing the deeper structural problems of inequity that created this problem in the first place. Because there's the relief pieces just to help people who are suffering that are immediate and needed to be delivered a long time ago. And that's one track with this rescue plan that's moving through Congress. But there are deeper structural problems that we also need to fix. And that is in sight for us to think about what comes next from Biden and from Congress on an infrastructure job creation package that has to start to right the structural wrongs and build in more equity.
Kate, I understand that your organization, Community Change, is also backing a critical but not as well-known part of the COVID relief bill that is basically including childcare and seeing childcare as part of the economic recovery that's needed. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, thank you for asking. We work with a lot of childcare providers and parents who have been organizing together to start to fight for an adequate childcare system. And when the pandemic hit, they were prepared to start to support each other because the system was at risk of collapsing, and have been advocating from here to today to try and get adequate resources through the COVID relief packages that have moved. And this particular package that is moving through Congress now includes a very critical, what they perceive as a down payment on childcare, and $40 billion that would go through the current childcare system and federal funds to help keep providers whole and parents able to access childcare when they are able to go to work safely. And that is a very critical next step. There's much more to do to make sure that we have universal childcare available to people. And it's a critical issue for us and the people that we work on behalf of.
I mean, just also politically speaking, you would imagine that lawmakers would see backing such a bill as a way to win re-election the next time that comes around. But unfortunately, we've just seen so much partisanship in Washington that it's all about, you know, opposing what the other party is taking up and, you know, proving to your constituents that you're a good Republican because you opposed a Democrat-backed bill, when if that same bill were backed by a, say, Republican president or you know, somebody from your own party, you'd be more likely to support it. And unfortunately, Americans don't, you know, when it comes to election time, they don't see the reality of what their representatives support or don't support, and the considerations that they make. You know, we really do need to, as Ilhan Omar was saying, discuss the Senate filibuster, right? That overarching through all of this, standing in the way of the Democratic agenda, Democratic Party agenda, and maybe even small d Democratic agenda, is mm-hmm. the Senate filibuster, which over and over again is going to basically make it impossible for, say, Bernie Sanders to envision, you know, progressive economic plan.
Yes, yes, 100%. Yes, and I've been doing policy advocacy, federal policy advocacy, for over two decades, and it has only gotten worse. Mm-hmm. And I think the outdated Senate rules are a huge part of the problem. And there are obviously many layers to the challenges that we see with partisanship and reasons behind it. But the outdated rules are just the most obvious, and they're in sight to change. And it's well past time we do so, because especially now, where here we are in a pandemic and it's taking months and months and months to even just get the basic relief out the door for people. And in the meantime, we're just hearing more and more about poverty increasing and suffering increasing. And we know there's a way to solve it, and to get to actual making laws and getting relief to people. And that is reforming the filibuster.
Right. And we saw last year when the government did act swiftly and passed the CARES Act, that not only was it popular, but it actually helped improve the economy. It actually kept people afloat during a time of crisis. It worked. It was a win-win-win for everybody. And for some reason, we aren't able to repeat that, even though since the time that the CARES Act was passed, the numbers, you know, more Americans have died, the infection rates have gone up, although they are finally on their way down. And maybe that was the Republican plan all along, to simply wait it out, because eventually the pandemic would end without them having to take leadership. Who knows?
I think one thing we do know, though, is just looking at history as a guide, is that we have to actually get turned to, we need relief right now, which is what Congress is doing right now, tending to. But we also need economic recovery. The economy will not recover immediately. And it's an opportunity for us to take on some of these structural inequities. It's also just, it has to be adequate. The infusion of federal resources and the structures around job creation need to actually be adequate and reach the communities of color who have been cut out of these relief packages and are in desperate need of good jobs and living wage jobs. And there is an opportunity before Congress to do that and do it well and do it adequately, unlike in times past when it was insufficient. And I think that is something that we are very focused on.
Kate, give out a website for community change.
Communitychange.org.
We'll post that from our website later today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Kate Kahn, Legislative and Advocacy Director at Community Change. We've been discussing the effort to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour and the COVID relief bill. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.